It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor here at Wide-Moat Investing Summit 2018, joining us from Charlotte, North Carolina. Will Thompson is Managing Partner of Massive Capital, a value-oriented investor partnership focused on listed assets with special attention given to industrial and commodity-related businesses. Will has previous energy and mining-related work experience in private equity, credit analysis, insurance, and government policy. As we will hear more in a few moments, Massive Capital combines a fundamentals-based approach to individual company assessment with in-depth capital cycle analysis to find compelling investment opportunities. On behalf of the MOI Global community, a very warm welcome back to this forum. Please continue.
Hi, Shai. Thanks for that warm introduction. Just to expand a little bit, Massive Capital is a traditional long-short equity fund. We take concentrated positions in our best ideas, and as you said, are focused on listed real assets, principally natural resources, infrastructure, industrial companies, and the service providers that help all those guys out. We've been up and running for 2 years as of today, actually, and this is our third MOI Global presentation. We've previously discussed diamond miner Lucara at last year's Wide-Moat and presented Hawpar, a Singapore-based conglomerate, at Best Ideas this past January. As a firm, we tend to like companies in the listed real asset space, in part because of a combination of past work experience, but also we tend to find that these businesses are overlooked by value investors due to the cyclicality and technical difficulty involved in understanding operations. GrafTech is a sort of interesting example of that last trait. The business sounds relatively simple, and in many respects it is. They sell what are called ultra-high power graphite electrodes to the steel industry, but that apparent simplicity masks fairly significant operational complication. As a fund, most of our investments are sort of that nature. The businesses look simple, but there is operational complexity. We like those businesses because there's an opportunity to sort of manage downside risk by truly knowing what you're invested in at the operational level, as opposed to just at the sort of aggregate financial level. Our experience has been that the cyclicality of these types of investments creates great opportunity, not necessarily for investors looking for companies that they can buy and hold forever. Cyclical real asset companies are generally not companies that one should buy and hold forever, but they are businesses that have very distinct periods of under and overvaluation, and that under and overvaluation creates fairly significant opportunities, at least from our perspective. Within the space of cyclicals, there is an opportunity to invest in businesses that have what I would refer to as a moat. The moats tend to be a little less robust, perhaps, or perhaps a little more transient than other companies. For example, a classic moat example being See's Candy. The moat isn't quite as long-lasting as that, but because of the cyclicality of these businesses, the moats can be quite strong at times. So, with that sort of brief introduction out of the way, let's talk about GrafTech. As I previously stated, GrafTech is an industrial consumables company. That means they make an input into a larger industrial process. In this case, they are the largest or second largest, depending on who you ask, producer of ultra-high power graphite electrodes, which are used primarily by electric arc furnace steel producers. The company has a dramatically different business model than its primary competitors. It is vertically integrated, which creates significant cost advantages, and sells between 60 and 70% of their production on long-term 3 to 5 year take-or-pay contracts, 85% of which are 5 year contracts. The breakage on those long-term contracts is also fairly significant, given that they're take or pay, buyers are usually on the hook for 75%+ of the contract's remaining value whenever they break it, if they should choose to break it. The vertically integrated nature of the business is not new. GrafTech has been vertically integrated for a while, but the opportunity to fully take advantage of the cost benefits that vertical integration provides with long-term contracts is new and represents a new sales model within the graphite electrode industry that is very difficult for competitors to copy because competitors themselves are not vertically integrated. And I'll go into sort of details later on about why it's difficult for them to become vertically integrated and why that vertical integration creates such cost advantages. As a little background on GrafTech, GrafTech was publicly traded prior to 2015 and had been so since 1995. In 2015, though, Brookfield Asset Management bought the business. And then just recently in February of this year, they brought it back to the public markets. Brookfield bought the business in the midst of a sort of reworking or a strategic revamp of the firm that had been underway for a couple of years. Frankly, they bought it at an ideal time because a lot of the revamping had been already completed. Brookfield pushed the strategic review process forward, divested some non-core assets, closed some facilities that were being utilized poorly, and then, as I said, brought the business to the market, brought it back to the market in about February of this year. So we believe that GrafTech has a window that'll last between about 5 to 10 years in which the combination of their sales model, vertical integration, operational expertise, and the general supply and demand dynamics within the graphite electrode industry create a significant moat that will allow the company to produce relatively predictable free cash flow in the neighborhood of $2.5 to $3 billion over the next 5 years, which is equivalent to roughly 50% of the current market cap. So much of which they management has stated they intend to return to shareholders. Okay. Before diving into GrafTech, a little industry background. GrafTech produces ultra-high power graphite electrodes used by the steel industry. The steel industry can generally be divided into two broad categories. Integrated steel mills, which operate a basic oxygen furnace, and mini mills, which operate electric arc furnaces. The integrated mills create virgin steel from metallurgical coal, iron, limestone, and oxygen, and a few other inputs. The vast majority of global steel is produced by integrated mills. This is particularly true of the Chinese steel industry, which is about 94% integrated steel mills operating blast furnaces. Globally, about 50% of the world's steel is produced via integrated steel mills, with the remainder produced by electric arc furnace mini mills. The mini mills are very different. They take scrap steel and melt it using an electric arc to produce recastable molten steel. This process uses graphite electrodes as the medium through which electricity is passed to melt the scrap steel. Generally speaking, electric arc furnace producers or production is favored by the developed world as it has higher productivity with lower overhead costs. Turning to a little background on the graphite electrodes, there are two general types of graphite electrodes. There are high-powered graphite electrodes and ultra-high-powered graphite electrodes. High-powered graphite electrodes, or ladle electrodes, are used by integrated steel mills to keep already liquid steel liquid, and they are usually made from what is called pitch needle coke, which is a derivative of the process of turning metallurgical coal into metallurgical coke, which is one of the first steps in the steel manufacturing process at an integrated steel mill when producing virgin steel. because these types of electrodes only need to keep an already liquid steel liquid, as opposed to actually melting scrap steel, they do not have the same sort of physical properties as the ultra high powered graphite electrodes, as the environment they operate in is sort of significantly less stressful. The ultra high powered graphite electrodes, on the other hand, used by electric arc furnace producers, are made by petroleum needle coke, or are made with petroleum needle coke, which is a petroleum byproduct of the refining process. They have to stand up to a much harsher operating environment because there is much more significant heat and electricity flowing through the system. They have tighter physical property requirements and are typically larger than ladle electrodes. And there's a higher intensity of needle coke use in their manufacture on a per ton of steel basis than ladle electrodes. So the graphite electrodes that GrafTech produces and that are used in electric arc furnaces, these sort of electrodes or these columns that you can see in this chart or diagram right here in the presentation, electricity is passed from one electrode to another through a mixture of oxygen and scrap steel, which produces temperatures in the range of about 5,000 degrees, which is roughly about half the temperature of the Earth's core for sort of context. This process requires significant electricity use. To contextualize how much electricity is used by an electric arc furnace, a typical 60-watt light bulb draws about 0.54 amps. Assuming an electrical system of 110 volts like we have in the United States, the electricity flowing through the graphite electrodes used in an electric arc furnace every second is about the same amount of electricity as 300,000 60-watt light bulbs would need. So EAF producers typically have furnaces that utilize three electrodes, just as the sort of schematic on the right of the screen suggests. And they usually stack three electrodes on top of each other. And the reason for this is that the electrodes are consumed in the process of melting the scrap steel. Depending on the productivity and operational cycle of the electric arc furnace, an electrode is consumed about every 8 to 10 hours. So a steel mill operating three shifts a day will consume about 9 electrodes. At the current time, there is no substitute for the ultra high powered graphite electrodes. They are a critical component of the electric arc furnace steel manufacturing process. But despite their criticality, they only represent about 1% to 5% of the cost of the steel. So for GrafTech, or from GrafTech's perspective, they're sort of sitting in a nice place where they don't represent a significant part of the cost, and so can raise their prices to consumers without creating too much pushback, but at the same time are absolutely critical for those producers. It's important to note that steel manufacturers typically prefer to source their electrodes from either a single supplier or in runs from a single supplier, and there are sort of two reasons for this. Electric arc furnaces are not a standard product. So if you go to an electric arc furnace run by Nucor, for example, it would be very different than one run by U.S. Steel. Each one is got slightly different electrode requirements and slightly different parameters. The other reason why producers like to buy their electrodes from one producer is that the electrodes need to screw together in a column. And the point where they screw together, that connection is a point of sort of significant weakness. So mixing brands of electrodes creates a less than ideal connection from the perspective of both strength and electricity flow. The negative impact of that is less than optimal efficiency of the electric arc furnace, or in the worst case scenario, the electrodes will actually break apart within the furnace. And if they do that, producers need to shut down the furnace, which sort of has a rough cost of about $1.5 million a day if you have to shut down the furnace. So it's pretty important to them that the supply be dependable, consistent, and of high quality, lest they not be able to run the furnace or are running the furnace and have to shut it down. Turning to the manufacturing process, and this is what GrafTech actually does. They focus on the manufacture of ultra high spec, ultra high power graphite electrodes. 92% of their sales are to steel producers, electric arc furnace steel producers in the Americas and Europe. The electrodes they produce are as big as 30 inches in diameter and 11 feet long, with a weight of about 2.6 metric tons. The production process for the electrodes is very complex and time-consuming. It starts with the production of what's called petroleum needle coke, which is a refined petroleum product originally developed in the 1980s by Phillips 66, which is the largest global producer of petroleum needle coke, and GrafTech, who is the second largest producer of petroleum needle coke. The petroleum needle coke production usually takes about 2 months. Once the petroleum needle coke is produced, it's blended with coal tar pitch, and the electrodes are extruded into sort of this round shape that you can see here. That process usually takes 3 to 5 days. Once they've been extruded, they're baked in a furnace for about a month, which removes impurities from the blended petroleum needle coke coal tar pitch mixture. The more impurities that are removed, the easier the electricity will flow through the electrodes, and thus the more efficient the process once the electrodes are deployed in electric arc furnaces. Once they've been baked once, the places where the impurities have sort of come out create air gaps, and so the electrodes are impregnated again with coal tar pitch, a process that takes about another week. Then there's a secondary bake, and finally a graphitization process. And the graphitization process is probably the most important step. It takes about 3 to 4 weeks and is the point at which the carbon in the needle coke is turned into graphite, which is an electrically conducting carbon compound. The graphitization process requires a significant amount of electricity, somewhere in the realm of 3,200 to 4,800 kilowatt hours of electricity per metric ton of graphite electrode. The electricity represents anywhere from 20 to 35% of the total electrode costs. To put that sort of amount of electricity into context, the average U.S. household uses about 750 kilowatt hours of electricity a month. So the graphitization process of the largest electrodes GrafTech makes, which weigh about 2.6 metric tons, requires about the same amount of electricity as a U.S. household would use in a period of 13 to 14 months, give or take a little, depending on size. So after the graphitization process happens, there's some final machining, and the electrodes are shipped out to customers. All in, the process takes anywhere from 4 to 6 months, depending on size of the graphite electrodes and sort of the specific needs of the consumer. The time required to produce the graphite electrodes is a meaningful constraint on the ability of the graphite electrode producer market to react to real-time changes in the steel market environment. Within the graphite electrode market, GrafTech controls about 25% of the market outside of China. Chinese producers, and I'll sort of go into this in a little bit, but we often talk about what the graphite electrode production in the rest of the world and the graphite electrode production in China. And the reason they're split apart is because the Chinese produce a completely sort of different type of graphite electrode. They produce principally ladle electrodes. And at this point, it's not clear that they have any ability or capacity to produce ultra high power graphite electrodes. So the graphite electrode market, as the pie chart here on the left shows, is fairly concentrated. There are really only about five main producers. The 16% that is others is a mixture of companies that produce fairly small electrodes, mostly for consumption in domestic markets, such as in Russia. So the market's fairly concentrated, and it got more concentrated last year when Showa Denko acquired SGL Carbon, who had previously been the second largest producer. So the second largest and third largest producers combined. So in addition to operating in the graphite electrode market, GrafTech also operates in the petroleum needle coke market, and that's where their vertical integration comes from. The graphite or the petroleum needle coke market is even more concentrated than the graphite electrode market, with Phillips 66 controlling 56% of the market, and GrafTech being the second largest producer with 18%. The petroleum needle coke market has four producers in total, and GrafTech is the only graphite electrode producer that has a captured supply of petroleum needle coke, which, as we'll see later on, is particularly important for them. So GrafTech's vertical integration is an important part of their business model. At the current time, GrafTech can produce petroleum needle coke needed to fill roughly 60 to 70% of their electrode production. The cost advantage this produces for GrafTech is significant. At the current time, electrodes produced utilizing petroleum needle coke from their captured facility, which is called Seadrift, have a total all-in cost of production of about $2,600 a metric ton, or roughly $500 to $1,000 less than the current spot price of petroleum needle coke. What this means is that if a graphite electrode costs about $10,000 a metric ton, which is the weighted average sale price of the electrodes GrafTech is selling via long-term contracts, their gross margins on the electrodes would be about 75% versus margins for competitors with electrodes produced using a third-party supply of petroleum needle coke, which would have gross margins of somewhere between 47 and 50%. So the vertical integration creates a fairly significant cost advantage for GrafTech. The needle coke market is one of the constraints in the needle coke market is one of the reasons why GrafTech is so well positioned for the next couple of years. The needle coke market, as previously noted, there are only sort of four producers. Those four producers control five facilities that can output about 780,000 metric tons of needle coke a year. Of that, about 60 to 70,000 metric tons is not yet in production. It's coming online hopefully this year as a result of debottlenecking of production facilities owned by Phillips. So the last year there was potential production capacity of about 710 metric tons with clear demand of about 660 to 670 metric tons. The production facilities don't usually run at full capacity based on our conversations with industry participants. So the market last year was either in balance or perhaps slightly in deficit. The significance of the supply and demand imbalance seems well captured by the needle coke contracting practices and the sort of price chart here. Historically, needle coke was sold to graphite electrode producers on one-year contracts. After a price spike last year, producers introduced six-month contracts. And it is our understanding that this year producers are only selling forward supply on three-month contracts. So spot prices currently range from anywhere from about $2,500 a metric ton to $3,500 a metric ton versus about $500 a metric ton in late 2016, early 2017. The price spike has been driven primarily by increased demand from graphite electrode producers, who are the sort of fastest growing segment of the steel industry, but also by demand from a new consumer, the lithium ion battery producers. Currently, they make up about 9 or 10% of the global demand for petroleum needle coke. But as recently as 2012, they were so insignificant a consumer as to not even register as a source of demand. The needle coke market is expected to remain tight as new production capacity is expected to take about 5 years to bring online. And the cost to bring it online is roughly about $3,500 to $4,000 per ton of production. So at the current time, we haven't quite reached a petroleum needle coke price that really incentivizes the addition of new capacity. GraphTech estimates that their Seadrift facility, just sort of contextualize what the cost of these things are, would cost about $500 million to replace at the current time. And they think it would take between 7 and 10 years to go from permitting to ramp up and final production if they were to build the facility as a greenfield facility. Turning to the long-term contracts, as a result of the tight needle coke market over the last year and the surety of supply that GraphTech can provide their customers that their competitors cannot, and the criticality of the electrodes to steel producers, GraphTech has been able to change the nature of electrode sales from one-year contracts that were historically negotiated in February of each year to 3 and 5 year take-or-pay contracts. This is where a significant chunk of the company's value comes from. Not only does it create increased operational predictability in a historically cyclical industry, but GraphTech has executed these contracts at or near high point in the current graphite electrode price cycle. So historically, the weighted average realized price that GraphTech received for their electrodes from 2006 to 2016, a period that included two cycle troughs and two cycle peaks, they historically received a price of about $4,500 a metric ton with their weighted average price on the take-or-pay contracts they have for the next 5 years being a little more than $10,000 a metric ton. So more than double what they historically were earning. The result of this is that between 60 and 70% of GraphTech's production over the next 5 years has locked in gross margins of between 70 and 75% with what we estimate to be a free cash flow yield of about 52%. The result of this is that over the next 5 years, the long-term contracts will produce free cash flow of roughly $3.6 billion, which is equal to about 63% of the company's market cap as of yesterday's close. So after debt, after paying down debt, that $3.6 billion in free cash flow would leave management with roughly $2.2 billion in free cash flow, much of which they have stated they intend to return to shareholders via either share buybacks or dividends. At this time, they haven't sort of yet determined whether it'll be more of one or the other. Brookfield Asset Management still owns 85% of the company. And so conversations with management seem to indicate that they are likely to sell down their stake in the business via share buybacks by the company. So we suspect that the capital return will occur mostly via share buybacks. But again, that's sort of yet to be determined. The long-term contracts leave about 30 to 40% of GrafTech's production capability between the period of 2019 and 2022 available for sale on short-term contracts or in the spot market. 96% of the supply this year is already sold with an expected average price of around $10,000 a metric ton. It's not really accurate to speak of the graphite electrode market as having a spot market. The supplies are mostly contracted, and available capacity is not really terribly liquid outside of Chinese ladle electrodes, which if you're interested, you can buy on Alibaba. But the hypothetical spot price at the moment for a graphite or for an electric arc furnace producer that absolutely needed electrodes and didn't have them looks to be around $15,000 to $30,000 a ton, creating a significant opportunity for the 30 to 40% of uncontracted supply that GrafTech has over the next couple of years to produce additional significant free cash flow on top of the existing robust free cash flow that the long-term contracts will produce. So from our perspective, the question now becomes what created the situation such that electrode prices have moved from a historical average spot price between 2010 and 2017 of around $4,000 per metric ton to well over $10,000 a metric ton? And is that sustainable? The answer appears to be that a sort of dramatic rationalization of the industry has reduced productive capacity dramatically. Since 2013, about 25% of graphite electrode production has either been permanently closed down or retooled for other graphite slash carbon product businesses. The result has been that production capacity utilization has risen dramatically, with higher efficiency plants producing more electrodes and low efficiency plants being shut down. At peak production capacity in 2013, the global ultra-high power graphite electrode production facilities were running at utilization rates of about 77%. At those utilization rates, most of the businesses were not profitable. Based on company reporting, sell-side research, and our own conversations with management teams, it looks like last year's demand for ultra-high powered electrodes would have necessitated a utilization rate of existing productive capacity of over 100%. So in essence, it looks like the market was in a deficit. The industry rationalization process overall is mirrored by a rationalization process of the operating footprint that GrafTech has as well. They have moved from six operating graphite electrode plants in 2012 to three. Meanwhile, they have increased the production at their three existing plants dramatically to the point where with three plants, they are now producing significantly more graphite electrodes than they were producing with six plants in 2012. Meanwhile, they have maintained one plant in a warm idled state that they can bring back online with a capital investment of between $5 and $10 million if they should be able to secure petroleum needle coke necessary to operate the plant. At the current time, management says they are searching for that supply of petroleum needle coke, the market is so tight that they haven't yet been able to secure it. We believe there's a reasonable argument to be made that spot prices of $15,000 to $30,000 per metric ton is an overshoot, and that there'll be sort of a significant pullback from there. But the generally tight nature of the market seems to support the idea that graphite electrode prices will remain elevated versus their prices from the previous 10 years. The additional sort of global capacity that can come online is also severely constrained, which would also suggest that the supply-demand imbalance is likely to remain. GraphTech is the only producer with a warm idled plant that can be restarted. That plant's called St. Mary's, and it's capable of producing about 28,000 metric tons a year of graphite electrodes. One competitor, Sandgraph, has a facility that they are looking to restart in Italy that has a production capacity of about 30,000 metric tons, but it is unclear if it is tooled up for ultra high powered electrodes or ladle electrodes. In addition, our conversations with Indian and Japanese producers lead us to believe that there's about 40,000 metric tons of capacity that they can bring online as a result of simply debottlenecking their facilities. In total, this looks like about 100,000 metric tons of capacity. At issue is the fact that bringing on new capacity is of no value if you can't secure a supply of needle coke, which, as we've already discussed, is difficult to do. There appears to be about 60,000 to 70,000 tons of available supply of needle coke in 2019 that is not yet spoken for, if you will. But again, that supply is the result of debottlenecking and capital investments that Phillips 66 is making this year. So it's not yet in production. Finally, we believe that the supply-demand imbalance will likely remain because the cost of building new production is so high. Graphite electrode plants are sort of notoriously tricky to build and run. The only recent sizable brownfield expansion was a 30,000 ton expansion by Showa Denko at their Ridgefield, South Carolina plant. That expansion was contracted out to Fluor in 2011. They completed the project in 2014. All in, it cost about $300 million or roughly $10,000 per constructed, $10,000 per ton of constructed capacity, which, given that the current long-term prices that GraphTech has been able to secure are about $10,000 per metric ton, we feel that it is unlikely that the current prices, assuming they back off from the $15,000 to $30,000 sort of spot market overshoot, we don't feel like the prices are there to incentivize the additional or the addition of new capacity. That $10,000 per ton of constructed capacity syncs well with GraphTech management's estimates of what a greenfield project would cost. They believe that greenfield construction is about $10,000 per ton of constructed capacity and would take anywhere from 5 to 10 years to build. So, in addition to the cost of new construction being in line with the price steel producers are already willing to pay for long-term graphite electrode supply, suggesting that that a stable market price to incentivize new construction has not yet been reached. There are some additional demand factors on both the electrode side of things and the needle coke side of things that suggest demand will, the supply-demand imbalance will remain. On the graphite electrode demand side of things, you have a restructuring of the Chinese steel industry underway. As previously stated, about 94% of Chinese steel production is via integrated steel mills running blast furnaces, so not utilizing ultra-high powered graphite electrodes. As a result of the rise of stable electricity supplies in China, as well as the growth in a stable, dependable scrap steel supply, and a central government drive to reduce pollution, the steel industry in China is swapping many of their blast furnace production capabilities for electric arc furnace production. In total, in 2017, the Chinese steel industry ordered or installed roughly 105 new electric arc furnace plants with a combined steel production capacity of around 66 million tons. Based on the volume of graphite electrodes to steel produced, that new supply would translate into roughly demand for roughly 112,000 or so metric tons of new electrode supply, and also 112,000 or so tons of new petroleum needle coke supply, as it takes about the ratio of needle coke to graphite is about 1:1 in the production process. Even if all the available additional capacity mentioned before was put into operation and a supply of needle coke could be found, the Chinese growth alone from the 2017 electric arc furnace orders would consume all of that additional supply we sort of discussed on the previous page. Given that electric arc furnace plants continue to gain market share, not only in China, but throughout the rest of the world, it seems likely that the market will remain in a deficit. Of course, as we've noted, that scenario would still require a supply of petroleum needle coke to be found. And as we've discussed, that market is also particularly tight, with a fast-growing lithium-ion battery market consuming ever greater quantities of the limited global supply. I'm not going to hazard a guess as to where that market is going in the future. Electric vehicles and lithium-ion batteries certainly look like they might be the future of transportation or a significant part of our sort of future transportation systems, but we still have a long way to go before we know what a stable sort of run rate demand from that market looks like. I think it's enough to say that the potential impact of the battery market on the needle coke market and thus the graphite electrode market is significant. And while rising input costs for many of GrafTech's competitors are problematic for them, it makes GrafTech's captured needle coke supply all the more valuable to us as shareholders and to them as electrode producers. Before turning to our valuation, I just want to touch on China briefly and explain why it seems unlikely that they will swamp the graphite electrode market and the petroleum needle coke market in the same way they have done to so many other industrial industries. Their ability to add capacity to the market in the long term certainly exists, but in the medium to short term, on the other hand, it seems highly suspect. For starters, between 2015 and 2017, at sort of government direction, the electrode industry within China closed down 40% of their domestic production capability. Again, that's all principally ladle electrodes. They don't appear to have any ultra-high powered graphite electrode production capabilities. The result of this dramatic sort of shutdown of 40% of their productive capacity was that both Platts and Jefferies believe that China was a likely net importer of graphite electrodes for their ladle and blast furnace operations last year. So the industry has already shrunk in China and of course is producing a different type of electrode. Perhaps more importantly though, in order for them to start producing ultra high powered electrodes, they need to not only build facilities capable of producing high quality needle coke, which they've not yet demonstrated the capability of doing, as petroleum needle coke production requires a refinery with what are called delayed cokers, and specifically delayed cokers that are dedicated solely to the production of petroleum needle coke, as it requires the delayed cokers to run at a completely sort of at different parameters than they are run at traditionally. But in addition to the petroleum needle coke production difficulties, they haven't yet demonstrated a capability of manufacturing ultra high power graphite electrodes. There are no existing facilities, and again, the demonstrated capabilities necessary to produce the electrodes are fairly significant. The technical hurdles are great, and they have yet to demonstrate their capability of overcoming them. Generally speaking, their ladle electrodes are considered subpar by developed world consumers. They used to supply a fair amount of ladle electrodes to integrated steel mills in Europe, and they are known for having a higher resistance to electrical current flow, and also for breaking a little more frequently than steel producers would like. Finally, turning to our valuation, we split the business up between contracted volumes and short-term or spot market volumes. We assigned all of the SG&A, CapEx, changes in working cap, and debt to our analysis of the section of the business with long-term contracts. We believe that those contracts are worth roughly what the company is currently trading for today, which is about $18.96. The spot contracts are worth, in our estimation, an additional $5 or so a share, resulting in a valuation range, in our opinion, of around somewhere between $21 and $26 a share, a margin of safety of about 12 to 28%. Based on yesterday's close. In addition to the DCF valuation we did, we believe EV to EBIT analysis supports the valuation range. As you can see from this table on the left, the blended rate of an EV to EBIT multiple valuation sort of comes out right in the middle of our DCF valuation range. We also took a look at a reverse DCF, which we do frequently to sort of see what the market is pricing into these companies. And as of yesterday's close, the market was pricing in a sort of a fall in the free cash flow, assuming a 10% discount rate. Now, given what we know about the long-term contracts, at the very least, the next 5 years, it's unlikely that the free cash flow is going to fall. Just turning back a couple of pages. There are obviously some potential risks for the investment and some potential catalysts. A significant decrease in the spot price for graphite electrodes would be damaging for part of the business. Obviously, with the long-term take-or-pay contracts at set prices, they have managed to ensure high profitability for 60 to 70% of their production for the next 5 years. That does, of course, still leave 30 to 40% for spot prices. So a significant decline in graphite electrode prices would certainly hurt, and it would not be historically unprecedented for them to fall fairly dramatically from the spot prices that are currently discussed of 15,000 to 30,000. A decline in EAF steel production would also hurt demand. At the moment, it appears that electric arc furnace production is on an upswing after having experienced about 10 years of stagnation as a result of the growth in blast furnace steel production in China. But of course, steel production is a cyclical industry tied to the economy, so anything is possible. The constrained petroleum needle coke supply is a bit of a mixed bag as a risk. Obviously, the constrained supply makes the captured supply that GrafTech has all the more valuable. But of course, they still need to supply secure supply for 30 to 40% of their production, which they don't have the petroleum needle coke capacity for internally. Delay or cost overruns for capacity expansions. At the current time, GrafTech is finalizing some debottlenecking at their existing facilities that should ramp up production to about 200,000 metric tons by the end of this year from a little more, about 170,000 metric tons last year. But delays or cost overruns for that would be harmful. That debottlenecking process is costing about $35 million this year. Capacity additions by competitors could be announced. There have been a few, but it's unclear sort of how serious they are. One company in Iran has supposedly secured an investment for production of a facility, but that was prior to some of the issues with U.S. sanctions of U.S. sanctions on Iran. So it's not clear where that's going. There is supposedly some production that is going to be built in China. But again, it is similarly sort of opaque. It's not clear whether it's actually going to be ultra high powered graphite electrodes or if it is just further production of sort of high end ladle electrodes, which are not a substitute for the ultra high powered graphite electrodes needed for the electric arc furnaces. Brookfield still owns about 85% of the company. That's obviously a fairly significant amount. So if they were to just sort of sell into the open market without sort of consideration for what they were doing to the market price, that would be a significant risk. We don't find that to be a terribly likely situation. Our conversations with GrafTech management suggest that they have already sort of spoken extensively with Brookfield about how they intend to sell down that stake. And it doesn't appear that they intend to sell it down into the open market. They are likely to sell it down through share buybacks. And it's also unlikely that they are to rush to do it as they would prefer to have the significant return on capital that's gonna occur over the next couple of years as a result of the long-term contracts. China can obviously overcome its technical challenges to become a producer of both high quality petroleum needle coke and ultra high powered graphite electrodes, but that process looks likely to take some time. So while I have no doubt that they will eventually become a significant producer, there remains this window where GrafTech can leverage their integrated supply of petroleum needle coke and their significant market share and long-term contracts to really produce some significant returns for shareholders. There are several potential catalysts to move this one higher. Higher electrode or petroleum needle coke prices are an obvious one. Increased electric arc furnace steel production would also be a positive, as it would increase the demand for the electrodes. But that's obviously tied significantly to industrial production and GDP growth. So that's more of a macroeconomic theme. Successfully debottlenecking plants this year, which is underway, is a positive that'll add about 30,000 or so metric tons of capacity to their production next year. And then again, they have this warm idled plant called St. Mary's that they would like to bring into production in the 2019 to 2020 timeframe, but have not yet secured a supply of needle coke for. So should they secure a supply of needle coke, they'll be able to bring St. Mary's back online, which could be a significant bump to the bottom line. With that, I'll sort of open it up to any questions that you may have, Shai.
Will, thank you very much for such an in-depth presentation that clearly shows your domain expertise. I'd love to please, if we could, circle back to slide 10.
Yeah.
Is this likely to come through dividends, repurchase, or there's not been any guidance?
Yeah, so our conversations with GraphTech sort of have left us wondering the same thing. It doesn't appear that they've really decided how they're going to return a lot of this free cash flow to shareholders. Their intention at this point really seems to just be to return it. I will say that, you know, there's a very tight relationship between Brookfield, obviously, and the existing management team. We suspect that the majority of the cash flow return will occur via GraphTech buying back shares, because that seems to be the most favorable approach to a capital return for Brookfield. But that is speculation on our part. There is a dividend at the moment. It's small. They seem likely to ramp it up. Will they ramp it up to the point that it is the primary means to which free cash flow is returned or capital is returned to shareholders? I don't know. My guess would be that it's more likely it'll be via share buybacks.
And turning back a couple slides to the pie charts, I'm noticing that on the left side, GraphTech has what seems to be the same market share as Showa Denko, which is 27%.
Mm-hmm.
To what degree is there an appropriate side-by-side comparison, and is it possible to actually identify the data of this other company?
Yeah, so Showa Denko and Tokai Carbon are both publicly traded Japanese companies. GIL and HEG are both publicly traded Indian companies. Of those four, the Japanese companies aren't great comparables. And the reason for that, the principal reason for that, at least from my perspective, is that they are in several other graphite and carbon related businesses, in addition to having a couple of sort of random businesses within that fall under sort of their corporate umbrella. Showa Denko also is an aluminum producer. Tokawa Carbon is one of the larger carbon black producers in the world. And the financials don't really provide enough information to separate out those businesses to the degree that a comparison is really worthwhile. Now, both HEG and Graphite India, which is GIL, are more pure play producers. And so they, at least from my perspective, seem like a better comparable. At the same time, though, they produce a mixture of ultra high powered graphite electrodes and ladle electrodes, and they have no vertically integrated or captured supply of needle coke. And sort of as I showed in one of these slides, that sort of capture creates significant cost advantages for GraphTech's operations that neither HEG nor Graphite India have. So from a comparables perspective, there aren't great comparables, but the two Indian operators aren't terrible comparables. Graphite India, HEG operations are more efficient than Graphite India's, or at least appear to be more efficient based on margins. Their margins, in fact, approach GraphTech's margins, but trail a little bit.
And turning to the slide with the risks, please, which of these potential risks would you say is most front and center on your mind? And how do you assess if your material are becoming more or less concerning incrementally?
Yeah, so I think that the significant decrease in the spot graphite electrode prices, in my mind, that almost isn't a risk, it's a certainty. Which is one reason why you'd see in our sort of spot market valuation here, we take the average realized price for the spot graphite electrodes and ramp it down over the course of the next 5 years to more than the spot price in the last 10 years, but significantly lower than today's current price. So that, you know, that is a very real, that is a reality. Those prices are going to come down. That will impact the returns on the spot production. The significance of that impact will depend on sort of how fast or slow that reversion to a more normalized price is. We suspect, given the tight supply of both electrodes and needle coke, that it will be slow, but it's certainly a possibility that we could be overstate how slow it is. So I think that's a fairly significant risk that, you know, again, is almost more than a risk. It's just a certainty. I think that China overcoming their technical challenges, you know, that is a risk in the 5 to 10 year period that is very real. But because of the complication in building either an electrode facility or a refinery that has the appropriate delayed cokers and whatnot, the time involved in that and the technical know-how, there does appear to be a window again for GrafTech to really take advantage of the supply and demand imbalance globally in the market. But I think in the long run, China will likely achieve sort of a state of overproduction of these industrial consumables, and it'll have similar repercussions for the market that oversupply of Chinese production has had in other sort of industrial industries. This is one of the reasons why I think during my introduction, I noted that a lot of these cyclical companies, they have these, to a certain degree, transient moats, which almost sounds counterintuitive, as those two things would seem not to go together. But you know, you can't own this, you can't buy and forget it. You've got to keep an eye on it, and there will be a window of time where it's overpriced, and there'll be a window of time where it is dramatically underpriced. I think right now we're in a window where GrafTech is reasonably priced, at least a reasonable price to start building a position at. We don't have to worry too much about the China factor, but I think in the fullness of time, it'll certainly be an issue to consider. So it's worth noting that over the last couple of days, GrafTech has sold off pretty dramatically. I think it might be down about 3% today. It was down a couple of percent earlier this week. If this week it was down about 5 to 6%, I wouldn't be surprised. I think at the current prices, it's a nice place to start building a position. I wouldn't necessarily take a full, say, 10% position. That's sort of where Massive Capital, we think of ourselves as having a full position at about 10%. I wouldn't necessarily take a full position right here. I think the cyclicality of these industries means you have to be extra cautious. With that in mind, the options market for GrafTech is kind of nice right now. January puts at $17.50 and at $15.